Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lucas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is here!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello, welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jim Buster, delighted to welcome along for a debut, Graham McGarry. How's things, Graham?
Very good, thanks, Andy. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Jim Buster, how's things, guys?
Aye, no bad.
Very good, thanks.
Well, that's a lot better than could be said for the last couple of results, as far as Motherwell's concerned. Jim will start last Wednesday night in what is one of the most disastrous results in kind of recent memory, I would say, in terms of the scale of it, a 7-2 defeat at Pittodrie. Yes, it's a hard place to go. Yes, I don't think we expected to take anything, but on the other hand, you don't expect to be 4-0 down at half-time, and just the kind of the night will go down as a bit of an embarrassment for a variety of reasons, it has to be said.
Interestingly, you obviously said there about the fact that, you know, quite a bad defeat in recent memory, but you know, it's something that we're perhaps beginning to get a little bit used to. You know, there's a time when you perhaps would never have considered really seeing Motherwell concede 6 or 7 goals, apart from, you know, once in a blue moon, and yet it's something now that's happened, I think, 3 times under McGee. You know, 6-0 at Tynecastle, 7-0 at Celtic, and then 7-2 at Pittodrie. So it's not quite as rare as perhaps you're suggesting there, but yeah, it was just an overall a bit of an embarrassment. We've said a good few times now on the podcast, just after certain defeats, that there's a way to lose a football match. You know, when you're a fan of a team like Motherwell, you know that you're not going to win all the time. You know that you're going to get beat against the likes of Aberdeen, Hearts, Celtic, particularly away from home, but you still want to see your team, you know, put in the required effort and be organised and defend well, and at least, you know, go down with a bit of pride and a bit of dignity. And that's just not what happened. It wasn't an acceptable defeat. It was completely unacceptable. And interestingly enough, you know, you obviously mentioned there about the fact that it was embarrassing for a multitude of reasons. I've not quite worked out yet whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, because it's one of those defeats where it's almost been glossed over slightly because of everything that kind of went on off the park, and I suppose, you know, what with hindsight, Saturday was you know, a lot more improved, so maybe that's actually worked in our favour, the fact that we weren't quite as slaughtered as much as we could have been, because all the focus was on McGee. But overall, a very, very poor performance, a terrible result, but it's, you know, one of three now.
Yeah, Buster, you look at the team for that Aberdeen game. I think we all spoke about it around about 7 o'clock when the teams were announced. And on paper, it looked a pretty strong side, a side that certainly should be able to, if not beat Aberdeen, certainly to compete with them, not to lose 7 goals. And to be fair, I think the 2 that we got kind of flattered us on the night. So there has to be a kind of shared responsibility here between the players and the manager. Yes, the manager isn't getting the best out of his players at the moment, but that's the time surely where professional pride kicks in, and these guys should be putting in a better performance, certainly a lot better than they managed to produce last Wednesday.
Sorry, Sparrow, as well. The thing skipped a wee bit there, and I missed some of the stuff you said there. But the game in general was just a complete disaster. I think, as Jay says, we probably weren't expecting, to pick up anything. I think if we'd got a draw, we'd have considered ourselves. It'd have been great if we'd got a draw, basically. But as you say, something's got to be looked at. The manager, the players. There's got to be a sort of, as you say, a shared responsibility between the 12 of them, basically, or the 14, 15, however many got on. But it definitely wasn't acceptable, and it's one of those things where, as Jay quite rightly says as well, it's sort of being glossed over the fact that we did lose 7 goals. It's all the chat was basically about, what happened in the stands rather than what actually happened on the park.
Yeah, in case you've been living under a rock, basically what happened was Mark McGee was sent to the stand, had a wee bit of set to with a supporter because he was being filmed on his mobile phone. There's wee bits I don't agree with. I don't understand why you're escorted into the front of the stand after being dismissed from the dugout. Surely there must be a corridor or something like that where he could be taken there a wee bit more subtly than the way McGee was, but that just seems to be the way it goes these days, and he didn't deal with the situation very well. Graham, Mark McGee, as a sports writer like yourself, it must be a headline writer's dream just now, because this isn't the first time this has happened this season. You look back to the game at Dens Park with the ghost goal, so to speak, the situation against Celtic with the warm-up and then forgetting the assistant manager's name. You've got last Wednesday night. It's becoming quite a common theme with Mark McGee, and I suppose it does deflect away from the fact that the team aren't performing on the park, but it's beginning to wear a wee bit thin with the supporters, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Andy. I think it's not just now that he's a headline writer's dream. Mark almost speaks in headlines. You'll always hear when people are discussing managers in our trade, they always say, he's good, he'll give you a line. And that's the phrase you hear attached to Mark McGee more than any other when people are talking about him in the journalism business. He gets it. He gets that the media can be something, a tool for him, basically, to maybe deflect away from bad results. I'm not saying that, he's a mastermind at it and he concocted the whole thing at Pittodrie to deflect away from what happened on the pitch, but certainly, he knows how to use the press to his advantage. And I can see how, that would really grate on fans at times, because I think he does get a wee bit of an easy ride from the media, maybe even subconsciously, because of that. Because they know that when they turn up on a Thursday morning or whatever, Mark will talk to them about just about anything, As you said, the situation the other night, I'm a wee bit torn on it. I think that I felt a wee bit sorry for him. I'm not just saying that because he gives me a line now and again, but basically, as you mentioned there, he was put into a situation where he's got into a set of supporters who are giving him, absolute dog's abuse. I think James McFadden was right to point out, they've got very short memories in terms of what he achieved there as a player. And the type of person that Mark McGee is, he was never going to take that lying down, just stand there and be subjected to that kind of abuse. So I kind of admire him for giving a wee bit of back, and it's a good laugh at the end of the day. It's brought a couple of headlines. I don't think it was as embarrassing to the club as what happened on the pitch, to be honest. A point that Jay made there, just to get back to that, I remember before the Hearts game this season, Fir Park, we lost 3-1, McFadden scored the free kick. We were talking to Mark McGee about, at Tynecastle last season, you were beat by 6, so obviously you'd be wanting to improve upon that. And he said, something that struck me was, well, this team are capable of losing like that, it's just something we have to accept. We'll have our off days where we will get beat 6 and 7. And I found that quite startling to say that, because you do touch upon the issue there of professional pride. And I think sometimes there's a tacit acceptance with Motherwell when we do go 2 goals down, maybe 3 goals down, the white flag comes up, and the guys having this in their head from what Mark said might just think, oh, it's just one of those days where we're not at it, and we seem to fold, and I don't think that's acceptable at any any level of football, never mind in the Premier League for Motherwell. So, yeah, I think he's got serious questions to answer about what's been going on the last wee while. And, you know, I like Mark McGee. I think his record against the bottom six is really good. And I think that's maybe what will keep him in a job and hopefully keep us in the league. But at the moment, yeah, I mean, it's hard to take when you're losing seven goals away from home.
Yeah, absolutely. And we moved into the Celtic game following that heavy defeat midweek. I'll go back to yourself, Jay. It was a game that you go into on the back of a 7-2 defeat. Celtic scoring goals for fun. They had beaten Inverness 6-0 the previous weekend. You feared the worst, but a 2-0 reverse, possibly about the best we could have hoped for. It sounds a very strange thing to say, but I think we could have been fairly content come the full-time whistle that we had escaped with a respectable performance and, more importantly, a respectable result.
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, when talking about the Aberdeen game, there are ways to lose football matches, and if Aberdeen was an example of, you know, a way not to lose a football match, then, you know, logically you've got to say that, you know, the trip to Celtic Park was essentially, you know, an acceptable way to lose a football match. We were far better organised. We played relatively well. And that's, you know, regardless of what happened on Wednesday, any team to go to Celtic Park and, you know, keep Celtic, you know, down to two goals and also go close a couple of times. You know, Pearson could have had a double. You know, there was at times when even, you know, Zach Jules was performing mazy runs through the middle and things like that. I mean, we certainly weren't, you know, we didn't turn up and just sit in and hope for the best, as perhaps, you know, I certainly thought we might do. And considering we also had, you know, a bit of a rejigged back line, you know, Hamill obviously missed out, McManus had to go off. So the fact that we actually managed to defend, you know, very well, it wasn't a fantastic performance by any means, but it certainly wasn't an embarrassment or an unacceptable performance. And I think we can be, you know, relatively pleased with what we've shown at Celtic Park. And it's interesting because going into that game, you know, Graham mentioned there that the idea that Mark McGee's already kind of commented that, you know, we're just a side that can lose six or seven. I mean, that is something that filters into the stands. I can't remember the last time going to a Motherwell game expecting quite as heavy a defeat as I did on Saturday. Plenty of times I've went to Celtic Park and expected to lose maybe 3 or 4 nil. But the feeling amongst pretty much every Motherwell fan was, you know, this could be 8 or 9. And, you know, we're talking about a manager who took an Aberdeen side there and lost by 9 goals. So that, to me, you know, it's not a good thing. You know, this idea that we're somehow, you know, capable of losing 7-0, it's not acceptable for me at all. And I genuinely can't remember a game when I've went with that attitude. And it got to the point where, you know, on Steelmen Online or on Facebook or on Twitter, you know, fellow Motherwell fans were kind of saying, oh my God, you're mental. You know, this idea that going to support Motherwell at Celtic Park was somehow an absolutely ridiculous notion, because we all expected to get such an absolute doing. And that's not a good place to be in. And Mark McGee can, you know, he does, as Graham says, he has got a good record against the bottom six, and that will, in my opinion, keep us up in the division. But there's something seriously wrong there. You know, I don't think it's to do with ability, because we've just been to Celtic Park, got beat 2-0 and played reasonably well. So it's not anything to do with performance levels or, you know, the actual capabilities of the players. It's a mentality issue. And that, to me, isn't good enough. That means that you're either not signing players with the correct mentality, or there's a mentality in the club that is somehow acceptable. And as Graham says, it's not. It's a startling thing to take into consideration, the idea that a top-flight team like Motherwell, who, yes, the ambition is to stay in the division, but, you know, could be looking at an outside chance of top six football, and yet we are in some sort of strange scenario where we merely accept that occasionally we're going to get, you know, beat 7-0. That's insane. That's madness. I mean, if Arsenal beat Sutton 7-0 today, they'll be, you know, relatively pleased. But, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion, and yet we are accepting that is somehow acceptable against teams in the same league. So it's disappointing, and it's worrying. But as for Celtic, you know, I think we can at least move forward now into the Dundee game with a little bit more optimism than we had on Wednesday, because it was a decent enough performance. And on another day, you know, as I said, Pearson could have got us back in the game, and then, you know, who knows after that.
Graham, an imperative point there brought up by Jay was the fact that Stephen Hamill pulled up in the warm-up through injury. Stephen McManus hobbled off after 3 or 4 minutes into the game. So two big players, two experienced players, both having to go off or be removed from the kind of situation at Celtic Park. You look ahead to next Saturday's game against Dundee. These are two big players that you would prefer going into that game within your squad at least. So certainly a few headaches for Mark McGee in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, when the news came through, I was doing the game at Fir Hill on Saturday, and one of the guys said to me, "Oh, you're in bother now because Stevie Hamill's pulled out in the warm-up," and then 2 minutes in, he shouted up again and said, "Oh, Steve McManus has had to come off." And on the face of it, you know, you would normally say, it'd be the easy thing to say, you know, that, oh, that's two experienced players and I really fear for us now. But given the nature of the game, it was sort of a kind of free hit for us, if you like, because as Jay said, everyone expected us to be cuffed anyway. I was quite intrigued to see how the back four would get on without those guys, because I don't think it's stretching it to say that they've not been in the best form of their careers over the last kind of year or so. And I think particularly Stevie Hamill hasn't looked fit at any stage in the last 2 years. So I was intrigued to see how they did, and I was pleased to see that they actually put in a credible performance. Obviously, I know Zach Jules gave away the penalty, but by all accounts, overall, we looked pretty solid and we defended our corner well. And hopefully that gives Mark McGee food for thought in terms of, you know, there is, in my opinion, an over-reliance on some of the more experienced players who have, don't get me wrong, been fantastic servants for Motherwell over the years, guys like Keith Lasley as well. But there are just signs there that are creaking a wee bit now. And I think with an eye to next season, not even thinking about Saturday, but they've got to try and blood or go for different options in there and different alternatives, because we can't rely on these guys forever. So I think getting into Saturday's game, if Stevie Hamill and Steve McManus aren't there, I think I'd rather have them in the squad, but I wouldn't be losing too much sleep over them not being in the starting 11, which is maybe something I wouldn't have said 2 years ago.
Buster, that's a kind of criticism that's been levelled at the club in general after the majority of defeats this season, that the kind of older heads are, as quite often is referred to as like the old boys club almost, that are kind of past it and they're dragging us down, which I think is a extremely harsh criticism to level at the likes of Keith Lasley, who plays almost on a weekly basis. Stephen McManus has served us very well. I know Graham touched on Stevie Hamill's had these injury problems, so that's someone that perhaps can't really be blamed for performances, basically because he's not been playing very often. But I don't think that we can underestimate how important these young guys, these older guys are when it comes to bringing on the younger guys. But at the same time, I think that's a very important point. We need to actually see a wee bit of a future without these guys, because obviously they aren't going to go on forever, and perhaps the time is rapidly approaching that we're going to have to prepare for life without the likes of Stevie Hamill, Keith Lasley and possibly Stephen McManus too.
Well, I think unfortunately that's probably right. There maybe has been a bit of an over reliance on, you know, some of the players. I think that McManus has maybe got another year or something on his contract. So I think that I think he'll be kicking about for a while anyway for next season as well. Maybe. I don't know what the deal is with Keith Lasley's contract. I think we've got big problems in midfield, to be honest with you. You know, we seem to have quite a lot of players now that can play in midfield, but I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago I said, you know, we need to actually start figuring out what our best combination is. And going back to the conversations we had 2 or 3 weeks ago as well, we need to settle on a formation, a lineup, you know, get a bit of consistency in there. But I think midfield has been a problem for us all season. And I think it's been well documented, the problems we've had at left back, basically. I mean, how many players have we actually had to play in there? There must be about four or five that have played there this season so far. So I think that, as I say, I don't know what the answer is, to be honest with you now, whether or not the management team at the club thinks that these guys are still the best option. Who are we really to argue? It's all right saying we watch them, you know, every week, but these guys are getting watched day in, day out, and if there isn't a better option here, that they are going to play.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose that you've now had Stephen Pearson into the mix. Lee Lucas extended his stay, so there's no shortage of options, but it doesn't seem like we can kind of find a settled, particularly midfield central pairing or central three to rely on, and that's why you've got the likes of Clay, Lucas rotated on almost a weekly basis. Certainly no degree of certainty there. We'll look at the Dundee game in a wee bit more detail, Jay, and you look at their result yesterday, a fantastic 2-1 victory over Rangers, where I thought they were very impressive. They're very strong going forward. I think at the back they remained very solid. Rangers didn't really have that kind of expected onslaught as you tend to find when they're 2-1 down with 20 minutes to go. They certainly didn't look overly threatened in the over the course of the 90 minutes, in fact. But they'll come full of confidence, now a 3-point gap over ourselves as well. Very much all the impetus is on us to go there and get a result. Or go there, we're going to Fir Park, but you know what I mean, it's been a bad run of results. We've got to turn our fortunes around. I would say it's arguably the most important game of the season so far.
Very possibly. I mean, this run of games has kind of shown, you know, obviously Mark McGee is a very divisive figure anyway, and it's a very polarised argument with the sort of the pro and anti McGee sides. And, you know, you see that in particular during a run like we've just had. On the one hand, you've got people saying that, you know, the current run that we're on is completely unacceptable. And, you know, McGee needs to pay the price for that. And on the other hand, you've got people kind of saying, well, it's been a very difficult run. And, you know, we deserve a wee bit of leeway with that. You know, having to go to places like Pittodrie and Celtic Park and play against the likes of Hearts. So a game like Saturday is a game where there are, you know, zero excuses in that regard. It's no longer, you know, a game against a top six team battling for Europe or, you know, the champions. It's against a team that, you know, we really should be beating at home if we've got any aspirations to really do anything this season, whether it's avoiding relegation, whether it's, you know, trying to knock on the door of the top six, whatever it is, if you're playing Dundee at home, regardless of how they've done the week before against Rangers, it's a game that we should be looking to win. You know, obviously, I watched the game on Sunday, and yes, Dundee looked impressive enough, but it's a, you know, we've said it before, it's amazing what can happen when you realise Rangers are actually quite poor and have a go at them. It's unfortunately something we've not been able to do, but it's, you know, it wasn't really a surprise when Dundee managed to get the win, because I don't particularly rate Rangers as it is, so it's certainly not, you know, a massive scalp for Dundee, so it's not something that really puts the fear into me. But I think as long as we can approach the game in the right way, and we've already mentioned that the mentality side of it is something that is obviously quite questionable at Fir Park, and it's all about that. If we can approach it in the right manner and have the right mentality and believe that we're not going to, you know, have one of those off days where we get a scudding, and we actually feel that we can go and you know, beat a side that we would hope, you know, we would hope that regularly we would be looking to beat, regardless of when we're playing them at Fir Park, then I don't see why we can't, because we still have the good players. It'll be interesting enough to see, you know, if Hamill and McManus are fit. The defence from when McManus went off looked fairly solid. You know, as Graham mentioned earlier, Jules of course gave away the penalty, but other than that, I thought the defence looked solid. Ben Hennigan for me had one of his best games for us so far. Interestingly enough, just in the midfielders point as well, Craig Clay was my man of the match at Celtic Park. I thought Lasley had a good game as well. So, you know, there is a bit of momentum there. It's not ideal. You don't like to lose games, and of course losing 2-0 isn't the best result of all time, but there are still positives there that if you can take them into the game and build on that positivity and you know, take the game to Dundee, then I would be hopeful that we can get a result. And as I would like to see the back four that finished the game at Celtic Park, I would like to see start on Saturday, regardless of whether Hamill or McManus make it, because they fully deserve to. They were up against a team that, you know, scores goals for fun. And what I think one of the reasons why there was, you know, this idea that we were going to get an absolute tanking again, possibly 8 or 9, is because this Celtic side are a different animal this year. In the past, you used to go to the likes of Celtic Park and Ibrox when Rangers were half decent, and 3-0 used to be the kind of the score that you would regularly see, because you would turn up, you would get a doing, and then they would take the foot off the gas. Brendan Rodgers doesn't seem to allow his teams to do that this season. It seems as though Celtic are just, you know, they score a goal and they're hungry for another one. So I think we can't underestimate the defensive performance and the sort of the organised performance we had at Celtic Park on Saturday. And that's a good basis to start from. And then when you throw in the fact that you do have good attacking players, like Cadden, like Molt, then, yeah, I'm surprisingly optimistic for Saturday, considering we're still only a matter of days away from conceding 7 at Pittodrie.
Graham, I suppose that's quite a big thing, the fact that we didn't find ourselves in the end of a bit of hammering on Saturday. You go into that game with a bit of a cloud hanging over you from Pittodrie in the midweek. You put in a respectable showing. I think there was perhaps a kind of certain atmosphere about our supporters that were kind of thinking the nights would have been very much out for the manager, out for the players, if we had received another heavy defeat. That turned out not to be the case. We can now go into Saturday's game with a wee bit of confidence. I know it's not a victory, and I know we're searching for a victory still without one in 2017, but for all that being said, it does feel like a wee bit more positive going into this one. And despite Dundee's victory on Sunday against Rangers, it's certainly a winnable game, and we've certainly got the quality within the squad to win the game.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I'd actually commented on one of Jay's Facebook posts saying it was a morale boosting 2-0 defeat, you know, and I think that's how it actually felt. I wasn't being facetious about that. I think that, you know, after what came before at Pittodrie, to come away from Celtic Park with, you know, a 2-0 defeat, that's almost, you know, level par. You know, we'll take that every day of the week. I think Jay was right there as well when he said, you know, the Celtic team that they came up against, they're ruthless and they're relentless. I was at the game against Inverness and they could have had 10, you know. I don't think that they even flattered them. So I really feared for us going into the game, and the fact that we came out, you know, with the 2-0 defeat, as strange as it sounds, I think it has given us a wee confidence boost ahead of Saturday. I think regardless of what had happened at Celtic Park anyway, this game against Dundee was always going to be a must win. It's one I was earmarking maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's been a must win, especially with the two games that preceded it. But I think what the result at Celtic Park has done, as you kind of touched on there, Andy, is that it's given people maybe a wee bit of a boost before it, and maybe it's bought Mark McGee a wee bit of patience from the fans, because I think this game, if we turned up and it was a very poor crowd, which, you know, there's every chance there might be, but certainly if we go behind early on, if we had taken a cuffing at Celtic Park, it could turn quite poisonous quite early, and I don't think, you know, that would be conducive to, you know, getting back into the match. But as it is, I think the atmosphere might be a wee bit more forgiving on Mark McGee on Saturday, even if we do go behind. I think hopefully the fans will stick with us, because as you guys mentioned there, I do think this is the most important game of the season so far. I don't think the result Dundee got against Rangers will have too much bearing on it, because it's a different game altogether. You looked at what Dundee were doing yesterday. I thought young lad Kerr was really good, and Mark O'Hara, but they were snapping into tackles and playing almost, you know, to stop Rangers playing and knock them out of their stride. They won't be able to do that to Motherwell as such, you know, because we don't really have that sort of possession-based football game that Rangers try and play. So I'm optimistic about Saturday. I actually think we will get a result. because I think Mark McGee, as I mentioned before, has a good record against teams round about us in the table. And I think off the back of what happened at Celtic Park, I would like to see him stick with the same back four. I don't know how Joe Chalmers did. I didn't see the full game. Maybe one of you guys can allude to that. But certainly I would quite like to see him stick with it, given that they only lost two goals. And hopefully we can come out of it with a positive result.
Just a wee side note to the game on Saturday will be Henrik Ayama and Tom Hatley making a return to Fir Park. The local bookies will be flooded with bets for Ayama first goal or Ayama any time, you would have to imagine.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, it always seems to be our ex-players scoring against us, but yeah, I always liked Henrik Ayama and Tom Hatley, actually, to be fair. I thought the two of them were right good players. Oyama's return to us didn't really work out as well as his first spell, but as you say, we know what they can do. I don't actually know if Tom Hatley plays midfield or right back these days. Do any of you actually know where he plays?
Midfield, but he was dropped for Sunday, sorry.
He was what on Sunday, sorry?
He was dropped on Sunday, but he normally plays midfield, aye.
Well, I always thought he was a better right back, to be fair, but as you say, I know it's Henrik Ayama set one of the goals on Saturday, whatever day it was, sorry there again. So, you know, that's always been his forte, hasn't it? 16 in one season with ourselves. So, we know what they can do. I would just hope, you know, that the defenders, whoever we play, also know exactly what they expect for guys like Ayama.
Yeah, another return to Fir Park was the return of Steve Robinson, who came back to the club today in a first-team coach capacity. It's something that I suppose the club must have been thinking about from shortly after he departed Oldham round about Christmas time. A short but fairly unsuccessful spell there under a club that are struggling financially. Robinson did a very good job under Ian Barraclough and Mark McGee. Over about a year and a half period at Fir Park, he returns possibly to add, I would say, some experience to the backroom team of James McFadden, who's just kind of dipping his toes into a coaching role. The fans aren't delighted at the manager. The manager possibly needs some support as well. It seems to make perfect sense from all sides of it, Buster.
Well, I think you're 100% right there. As you say, we've got a young assistant manager in James McFadden. You know, again, I'm no privileged to know what actually happens behind the scenes at the training or anything like that. So we've got a manager, as you say, who's struggling, a young assistant in McFadden, and we've got a guy who has now had a go at managing himself. I think the old one job was a bit of a poison chalice, I think, to be honest with you. I think he went there and, you know, I think I was reading the other day that he'd only had something like five or six players on the books when he arrived. But again, you know, as you say, he done well with us as part of, you know, Barraclough's team, and then obviously McGee's team when McGee took over as well. He's highly thought of. You know, he was part of that Northern Ireland setup at one point as well. So I kind of really see it being a bad move at all, to be fair.
Yeah, Jay, you would have to think that this is an opportunity for Mark McGee to bounce ideas off another experienced campaigner. I don't think that you get to 1,000 games in management like Mark McGee has without seeking advice elsewhere. Perhaps James McFadden just lacks that experience and the nous to be fully confident in what he's recommending. So this, it just seems like it'll help McFadden as much as it will potentially help McGee as well.
I mean, it's an interesting one. We're not a club that, you know, can really afford financially to just kind of improve the management team whenever we feel like it. So it's certainly, I can't imagine it's the kind of signing that, you know, was done lightly. But obviously there seems to have been, you know, a need for it identified. It's one of those ones where I think it's a slightly strange one. I do agree that, you know, by all accounts, you know, it was really well thought of first time around, so I do agree that it can only be a positive thing, but it does throw up some questions about, you know, essentially why the need to bring him back in, whether it does say, you know, it's something about James McFadden's assistant, whether it's, you know, something more to, you know, who knows, conspiracy theories, you know, is Robinson going to be manager from the summer onwards when McGee packs it in? I mean, you know, there's a lot of questions can get raised by something like this, because we aren't the kind of side that goes out and just, you know, adds, you know, it's not Football Manager where your boardroom says that you're allowed 13 first team coaches and you go out and just sign them all. We're, you know, got a bit of a, you know, financial constraints in that regard. So to bring in someone who presumably would have been on a decent wage as assistant manager under Barraclough, you know, I can't imagine he would be getting a lot less to come back. So, you know, it's a wage that could have perhaps been used in a player. So to use it on a coach, it does, I think it's an interesting move, and it would be interesting to see exactly why that's occurred. But I do agree. I think that by all accounts, very well thought of. Seemed to be, you know, I'm not sure how much truth there is, because obviously he didn't have a great time at Oldham, but there did seem to be a kind of a hint of the idea that Robinson was somehow the better manager of him and Barraclough. So it's certainly an interesting sign, and it can only be a good thing. And if it does improve, you know, McGee, because he's able to bounce ideas, or it does give McFadden a bit more experience in what he should be doing, then it can only be a good thing. And just to go back to Graham's point about our question about Joe Chalmers at Celtic Park, you know, steady, I think, would be the word. I'm not Joe's biggest fan. I think that he gives an air of a nervous player, I think, when you see him, and that translates into the stands. I think, you know, you're quite nervy when you see Joe Chalmers line up at the likes of Ibrox and Celtic Park. But as I said earlier, the back four, the sort of decimated back four that we ended up playing with, was reasonably solid, reasonably well organised, and Joe Chalmers did play a part in that.
Can I just? I was going to say, Andy, sorry to interrupt, but just on the point of Steve Robinson coming back, I mean, I don't know, I'm not privy to the thought process behind it, but maybe a factor would be, I'm not sure how much Mark McGee splits his week between Motherwell and Brighton now. Obviously, he's got his family down there. I wonder maybe if they felt a more senior presence around the place when Mark's not at the club might have been something that's useful, because I think all reports I'm getting on James McFadden is that he's very highly thought of. He's attacked the job with real relish, but maybe, you know, he just needs a wee helping hand during the week when at the end of the day he's really left to man the fort by himself.
I think another big factor is as well that you consider the fact that we've perhaps been a bit too quick to get rid of managers in recent times. I think quite a lot of people thought that there was still a bit more time for McCall, but Stuart McCall obviously came to the conclusion that that wasn't the case. Ian Barraclough was charged with a rebuilding job at the start of his first full season at the club, and by September he was away. You look back at last season when we had lost at Fir Park to Kilmarnock, it looked for all the world that we were going to be in another relegation battle, but ended up finishing in fifth place. So I kind of think that this might be a way around acting too soon. It's a prevention to get an itchy finger and firing the manager on the back of some bad results. I think it's maybe a show of faith in McGee as much as anything else.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I think Mark McGee, you know, by all accounts, he wasn't an applicant for the job this time when he got it, and there was around 80 or so applicants. So it shows, you know, what the club think of Mark McGee, and I certainly know the working relationship between him and Alan Burrows is very good and very strong. And, you know, I don't know, I mean, a lot of people are maybe presuming that Mark McGee's just going to leave the club at the end of the season. His contract's up, and that'll be that. They'll shake hands and we'll go our separate ways. But who knows, as you say, you know, Mark McGee's done an excellent job at Fir Park, the twice that he's been in charge. He's got, obviously, another side to him. There's an arrogance about him and an ego there that isn't everyone's cup of tea. But I don't think you can argue with the job he's done either time. When he came in, you touched upon that there last season. You know, we were really, really spiralling towards another relegation battle, and we finished fifth in the table. This season, you know, it's had its ups and downs, but certainly we're well in the hunt for the top six again. I'm not sure how much that's down to our, you know, good play and how much the mediocrity of the division plays a part in that as well. But certainly, you know, his job remit is to, you know, keep us in the league, challenge for the top six, bring on some young players and try and sell them on. And I think if you take the job at that face value, he's pretty much hit the mark in the head so far, and I think he deserves judgment to be withheld on him until the end of the season, where we see where we finish up, and then we can obviously make a decision from there.
Yeah, but you would have to think that this appointment as well will mean that the speculation over McGee's future is pretty much put to bed. You'd think that they've kind of called for reinforcements, they've called for a bit of help, but there's been no kind of dreaded vote of confidence or anything like that. It seems very much for all the world that McGee will be here till the end of the season, at the very least.
I'll be honest with you, I don't think that was ever in doubt. It's, you know, obviously you read the forums, you read Facebook, you read Twitter, whatever, and you know, there is people who want rid of him. Don Gamarang, we've been on a very bad run of recent. You know, whether or not the games have been tough as they have been, we're still on a terrible run. We're getting terrible results as well, obviously conceding seven goals and things like that. So it's not a surprise that people are wanting rid of him, considering people were wanting rid of him before. Well, basically, as he got the job again a second time anyway. So I don't think there was any doubt that he was going to be here till the end of the season. But I think, as you say, that's just sort of, you know, confirms it, bringing another person who knows the club, who knows McGee. And as you say, hopefully bounce off some ideas with him, and you know, bounce ideas between them, sorry, and just see exactly where it takes them. Just to go back to the point that Graham made about Mark McGee being down in Brighton and stuff like that, I actually asked Flo about that not long ago, and he told me that Mark McGee is essentially back in the club by Monday. He goes down after the game on a Saturday and he's back in the club by Monday. Anybody who's mentioned that to me since, you know, has basically told me they think that's bullshit, but, you know, I can only go by what Flo's telling me, and I've no reason to disbelieve him at the moment. But, you know, as far as I'm aware, he's missed very few training sessions on a Monday, and that's it.
Yeah, and I suppose when the contract negotiations were being kind of settled, you would think that it was the case that, given that Motherwell approached Mark McGee rather than the other way around, then there would be kind of part of the negotiation would be that he was able to go and visit his son and his family. So I don't really have many issues with that, but I think it's something that will be used to kind of beat him with when results aren't going as well as they should be, or what people view they should be. So that's kind of part and parcel, I suppose. I'm kind of wary of the time due to the fact that Graham's buggering off to play it seven sides, but we'll just a quick couple of things before we wrap it up. Jay, the Les Hutchinson match in the Welsh Society contributions, basically doubling everyone's contribution as a result. Perhaps a story that gets swept under the carpet somewhat just due to the fact that the team are struggling on the park, but a fantastic gesture, a fantastic opportunity for the Welsh Society. I think it was you that said it a couple of days ago. They've basically been handed their own kind of marketing scheme here, a fantastic chance for them to bolster membership, bolster money coming into the club. Got to grab it with both hands, and I'm charging you personally with making sure this happens.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, I think one of the things that the Welsh Society has been guilty of, and I've said it plenty of times before, is that kind of mentality of build it and they will come. And so whether they just saw themselves as a fundraising campaign or whatever, I'm not sure. But if you're going to run fundraising campaigns, you still need to have, you know, specific fundraising campaigns. And I don't think the Welsh Society's ever really had anything of that, you know, kind of style. But Les has, it's, you know, if you're wanting a catchy slogan, or you're wanting, you know, something that's really easy and simplistic to tell people why to donate, Les Hutchinson has handed over a ready-made fundraising campaign. You know, the double the money thing is a fantastic opportunity. It seems to be getting grasped already by plenty of people. You know, not just being happy to contribute what they're already contributing, but actually increasing what they're contributing so that Les then doubles it and even more money's generated. So it's a fantastic gesture from Les first and foremost. And it is completely, you know, vital that the society uses it to their advantage as much as possible, whether it's fundraising events, whether it's just getting the message out there, whether it's even just buckets at turnstiles or football cards. You know, at the end of the day, if you raise, you know, 30 quid and Les is going to turn that into 60, then every little helps. So it's a fantastic opportunity, and, you know, I would definitely hope and presume that the society will be hammering the absolute shite out of it for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity to personally, when I work out how I actually go about increasing my monthly donation, then I will be doing it, particularly because I like the thought of Les having to go and then spend an extra £5 or £10 a month from his own pocket. That's that pleases me somewhat. Off air too, the work's continuing on it. We had a good couple of results in terms of companies coming in and sponsoring the publication in recent weeks. We'll hopefully have all the kind of confirmation of that out over the course of the week. Still time to get involved, particularly if you want a personalised copy. The deadline for that is the 28th of February. You'll have your name or the name of your children or whatever you really fancy printed on the back cover. So please, if you can, £8 a copy. You can get them from the podcast website. And I would say that's pretty much all we've got for this week, guys. Graham, first and foremost, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy your game of seven asides. I hope we've not put you off your stride too much.
No, I'm sure I'll be the bottle of wine last night. I'll probably put me off my stride, mate. But thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
No problem at all. Jay Buster, thanks as always, guys.
Cheers.
No luck.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. Me.